Welcome back, Baseball America Prospect Profile. Jacob Rudner, JJ Cooper. We're releasing one of these every day during spring training, breaking down the number one prospect in each MLB organization. JJ, we're talking about Leo DeVries, the A's number one prospect. One of the more interesting players out there right now. He signed the second largest bonus in the 2024 international class and was aggressively pushed to low A for his debut. He was then shockingly traded this past season. An interesting player. What do we need to know about Leo DeVries?
I would agree if you shockingly traded. And I say that not because the return, they got Mason Miller. The Padres got the best, you know, young closer in the game in the deal. And Mason Miller was great after that for them. But we don't see players of Leo DeVries' caliber traded very often. I guess you probably should throw the addendum, other than if AJ Preller is making the decisions, because AJ Preller will trade. We know that. DeVries is one of the top prospects in all of the game. You know, a top 15 prospect consistently for the last couple of years for us. One of the youngest shortstop prospects at every level that he's played. One of the youngest players at every level he's played at. That's been kind of part of the challenge of evaluating him, I'd say, for scouts and all, is that when he has had kind of little issues at times with his hitting and all, and it's been only brief issues, I would say, it's usually adjusting to a level where he's 2, 3, 4 years younger than almost everyone else in that level. And so we see it. We saw him last year kind of really get better and better as the season went along, reached double A at an age where, to just put it in this perspective, this is a guy who's significantly younger than Rock Chulowski, who is the likely number one pick right now in the 2026 MLB draft. Well, by the time Rock Chulowski gets drafted, Leo DeVries very well may be in AAA or knocking on the door of the majors. He is moving so quickly, but he's a pretty well-rounded prospect too. It's something where when you look at him offensively, you see the potential for real impact, an advanced approach for his age. Again, very advanced for his age. But then you look at him defensively and you will see some hiccups, some flaws, some issues, but a lot of them are that he's really good defensively a lot of the time. And then he has those issues of learning how to play shortstop at the MLB level. And I would say with that, that you'll see him make the highlight play and then sometimes try to make a play that maybe he shouldn't try to make. That's the expectation of what you want to see, I would say, from a young shortstop, and the kind of that learning, oh, I shouldn't. Yeah. Okay. I've got a 10% chance of making that play and a 50% chance of an error. I'm just going to hold this ball. I'm not going to make that throw. I'm just going to, you know, kind of hold off on doing that. Those kind of issues of aggression, I would say, are better than the guy who can't make the play. Leo DeVries can make a whole lot of plays that a lot of shortstops can't. And I look at him and you say, like, okay, well, this is a team that has Jacob Wilson at shortstop. In the long run, I would expect that DeVries is the long-term shortstop and probably moves Jacob Wilson very well, maybe to second base. That could be a really impressive double play combo. And by the way, by 2027, you know, with many years to go after that, this is a double play combo that actually could see the new stadium in Las Vegas before too long. That's the kind of prospect DeVries is. You are talking about serious upside, both offensively and defensively. But the other thing about this is there's just kind of a general rule, which is the players who reach the majors at age 20, age 21, those players have a lot higher chance to be the all-time stars or the, you know, the greats of a decade than players who reach it at 23, 24, 25, 26. And Leo DeVries, even if he goes on a slower path now that he's an A than he was when he was a Padre, should reach the big leagues by age 21.
You mentioned Las Vegas. One of the things that makes DeVries such an interesting gamble is the fact that he is a switch hitter. I'm curious, JJ, what are the differences between the two swings? We know that the left-handed swing might be a little bit cleaner than his right-handed swing, but what did we hear in the preseason, in the lead-up to this year, about the differences between his two sides?
I would agree with you on that the right-handed swing, which obviously is the less important one, is maybe a little bit behind. But I would also say with that's also the side that obviously he gets less work at. I do think, though, that this is – we see this nowadays where I feel like there's a trend in Major League Baseball that if you just look at the number of left-handed hitting infielders and switch hitting infielders out there, there is that realization that especially in a world where you no longer have the lefty one-out specialist, the lefty reliever, you're seeing the kind of, you know you're going to face more righties and lefties. And so having a polished left-handed swing like DeVries does have is kind of, I would say, you would much rather have that than have him be better from the right side than the left. But I also think there's a lot of value there in that, obviously in his case, he's never going to face, he's always going to have the platoon advantage. But on top of that, it also goes back to, like, when you look at his development, it is harder to work on two swings. It is harder to develop as a switch hitter than it is if you're a righty or a lefty, where you just focus on one swing. And the fact that DeVries has been able to do that and do that to a pretty polished level, again, I'll just keep emphasizing, while being so much younger than everyone else, every pitcher that he's facing, is kind of a good long-term indicator for him as well.
This is an athletic system that is loaded with upside right now. You got Jamie Arnold, who was a top pick in last year's draft. You got Gage Jump, who's been really exciting. Yoenci Calame was one of their highlight signees in the international class. This year, Wei-Yin Lin was a guy who we considered for the top 100 in our process. How hard was it in terms of deciding the order here when it came to putting DeVries number one? And did any of those guys who I just mentioned generate enough consideration to maybe push him for that spot?
I think there was a really good debate about Arnold versus Jump at number one before this trade. The minute that DeVries came into the system, he was the clear standout number one. He, if you look at our top 100, it's not close. The gap between him to Arnold is a pretty good gap. The gap between Arnold to Jump could slide a piece of paper in between those two guys. You could very well make an argument for whether you like Jump as the best pitching prospect in this organization or Arnold. When it comes to the best prospect in this organization, I don't think there's nearly as much debate, because as much as you can like Arnold, as much as you can like Jump, and by the way, Jump could be in the big leagues this year, Arnold, I would say by next year, but at the same time, those guys just don't have the upside. Like, again, DeVries is a guy who, if it all clicks, and there's always risk, and especially for a guy who's so young as he is, but if it all clicks, you are talking about a guy who could produce 3, 4, 5 WAR seasons, year in and year out. And those kind of players are really hard to find. That's what makes DeVries one of the best prospects in the game right now.
Well, by all accounts, it sounds like the A's landed one of the most exciting players in the game when they traded for him this past offseason. For more prospect profiles, check out Baseball America's YouTube channel, releasing one of these every single day during spring training. Don't miss the next episode either of the Baseball America Hot Sheet Show, which comes out every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. For JJ Cooper, I'm Jacob Rudner, and we'll see you next time.
We're back for another of the Baseball America Prospect Profiles. Today, we are talking about Houston Astros' number one prospect, Xavier Nyans. Nyans was not our number one prospect to start the offseason, but Jeff, it's been a pretty busy offseason for the Astros. Jacob Melton was number one. Jacob Melton was traded to the Rays in a three-team deal that saw Mike Burrows come to join the Astros rotation, and that means that the Astros' number one pick in the 2025 draft, Xavier Nyans, shortstop third baseman out of Washington State, high school shortstop third baseman, is number one. So let's talk about Nyans and what he brings the Astros. I feel like that, for one, we had a kind of stretch there a few years ago where the Astros didn't get to pick in the first round for a little while. Now they're going kind of a little bit of a higher upside prep profile than I feel like that they did there for a stretch. What is it about Xavier Nyans that stands out?
It's the power, JJ. And when we're talking about Xavier Nyans, the thing that stands out right from the jump, it is the, plus to potentially plus. We have a 65 grade on it. We could maybe even push it to a 70, but I think we want to see him hit a little bit in professional baseball before we put it up there. But the EVs this guy put up on the prep circuit, the home runs that he hits in BP and in these home run derby contests that we've seen him in, and then just the power that he's shown in games. And you go through that film, on the synergy service that we use, and you just, cycle it by extra base hits. It's impressive contact. you know, one of the louder barrels, one of the more highly touted sluggers in this class. And this is a prep class that, you know, included a guy like Ethan Holliday, who obviously had a lot of fanfare and be, of course, coming from the Holliday family, everyone knew who he was. Nyans was every bit the slugger that he was, you know, maybe even has a better shot to maybe stick in the infield long-term, or at least on the left side of the infield. I don't think that he's a shortstop, but it's a big arm to go with the big power. There's some hit tool concerns and questions, JJ. But I do think that this is one of the higher upside players that we've seen the Astros just have in their system in quite a long time. Certainly when it comes to draft pedigree, one of the higher upside players that they've grabbed. And I think it's exciting if you're an Astros fan looking forward to 2026, 2027 and beyond, that you could have this guy at the front of your system who's a true top 100 prospect. And, you know, over the last couple of years, most of their top guys have been fringe top 100. A guy like Jacob Melton might be on the back half and then move off the back half at certain points in time. They haven't had that true slam dunk, you know, number one top 100 type prospect. And I don't know if you agree or disagree, JJ, but I think Nyans provides them that.
No, I think that this is going to be a fascinating, we love to watch what guys do kind of that first full pro season. I would say this is especially true with Nyans. Like you said, there's no questions about the power. And when you talk about the defense, like there's really not even that many questions about the defense. He's not a shortstop, probably long-term. You would be surprised if he is, but the power is supposed to be like, will fit very well at third base in the long-term. Probably that's his best fit. So what we're really looking at here is okay, you go from amateur baseball to pro ball, and you've got to kind of clean up the swing a little bit, right? So what we're going to know, I would say, even by mid-season of this year is he able to make those adjustments to where the hit tool plays enough to get to the power? Or is it a little bit more difficult for him to kind of clean up some of those things, make the swing a little simpler, a little shorter? Jeff, like what will, like how important do you think the first even like half of the 2026 season is to kind of establishing what kind of prospect Xavier Nyans is going to be?
Yeah. And I mean, it's tough to say. We always talk about how tricky the Carolina League can be. And I do think that he's a guy that will probably jump the complex, debut in Fayetteville to begin the season. And that's not necessarily the easiest place to hit. The other parks within that league are not the easiest places to hit. So sometimes the numbers drag a little bit, but what we're going to be looking at and paying the most attention to is exactly, you know, what we paid attention to with Roman Anthony, who is in fact, a guy that Nyans has been comped to by some evaluators, you know, in terms of some hit tool concerns, but it could potentially clean up with a couple of tweaks. If he's making contact in the zone and it's at a reasonable rate, showing those EVs, showing good angles, it wouldn't shock me if he maybe is, you know, in Fayetteville for a month or two. And then if he's, you know, putting together the good underlying numbers, could make a jump then up to Asheville, which is a great place to hit. And I think Nyans would put up, you know, huge numbers. So, you know, I think that it's important, but I also think that we have to focus on the right things because the slash line may not look as good as it should.
And that's where I would say, like, when I say the first 3 months, it's not the slash line necessarily. It's how the swing looks, right? Another guy, again, another example of a guy, and I'm not comparing Xavier Nyans to Connor Griffin, our number one prospect in the game, but I'm talking about the progression. When Connor Griffin was in high school, there was this concern of how the swing was going to play, had a little bit of an arm bar. Connor Griffin went away, first off season of pro ball, came back with a cleaned up swing. Even in spring training, when you saw him, Jeff, you're like, oh, this is better. This is improved. Again, Xavier Nyans doesn't have like massive swing flaws he needs to improve. But we're going to look just kind of the ease of how his swing, the ability to barrel the ball, those kind of things, I think more so than if he's hitting 280 with a 380 on base or 240 with a 320 on base. Those things, especially not worried about the power because I'm not really that worried about that with Nyans. Those are the things I think they'll be really interesting to pay attention to in 2026. And again, even if he is in the Carolina League, that is going to suppress those numbers to some extent. I think it's kind of looking more kind of how that swing looks than it is the actual production, especially in April. Is that when you look at it, like when you see the length and a little bit of the load and all that, do we think that there's tweaks here to be made? Or do you think that this is something where we expect to see the same swing exactly going into 2026?
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see tremendous changes to the swing. It's actually a fairly pretty swing. I mean, it's, you know, one that's designed to find barrels and do a lot of damage. I think some of it's going to come down to just swing decisions and attacking the right pitches. And, you know, they could maybe flatten it up a little bit, realizing that they maybe have some angles that they can sacrifice from time to time just to get to a little bit more contact. You know, we saw that, though it took much longer with a guy like Josh Baez this year. He has that underlying motor for all of this to work. So I think it's going to be more small tweaks, adjustments to maybe like hand position, some of those sort of things. They're not changing the bat path on a guy like this that gets hard contact at the angles that he gets. I think it's just more dressing it up and making sure that, you know, he can get to that power and those good angles as consistently as possible.
Do want to also point out that this is a team, though, that also, if you get to the midseason this year and Xavier Nines is no longer the Astros' number one prospect, that may not be a terrible thing. Ethan Frye, who LSU outfielder, who's their number, you know, right behind him now on this list, is a guy who also has the potential to be, you just talked about, like that impactful top 100, not just the very edge of the back, but Ethan Frye could also leap into the middle of this top 100, I feel like.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. I think that they have multiple guys here in, you know, Nyans and then Frey that could make that jump into the top 100 prospects. Frey probably doesn't have the upside of like jumping into the top 50 like I think Nyans has, but more like in that 75 to 100 range. And it's been a long time since they had two top 100 guys that, you know, I think you could maybe look at the end of the season and say both of these guys could be on this list in preseason 2027. And I think that they have that. And then there's sort of this other one that's sneaking out there that they got a couple years ago in the second round in Ryan Forcucci that we haven't seen pitch yet. He had a full healthy offseason, is ready to go in this spring. We'll see what he does. He's another guy that can maybe creep onto the back of the top 100 just based on some of the skills that he showed in college and what the buzz was prior to his arm injury.
Ethan Frye is interesting. Ryan Forcucci is interesting. But the number one prospect in the Houston Astros organization is Xavier Nyans. And that's another Baseball America Prospect Profile. Hello everyone, JJ Cooper, Jeff Ponce. We are doing the Baseball America Prospect Profiles, where we look at the number one prospect in each and every MLB organization. Today we're looking at the Los Angeles Angels number one prospect, right-hander Tyler Bremner, their number one pick, their first round pick in the 2025 draft, number 51 on the Baseball America top 100. Jeff, Bremner was kind of came into last year as one of the best college pitching prospects in that draft class. And I would say that if you paid close attention early and then wandered away, you may have thought that he had a disappointing year, but he really didn't. He actually had kind of, when you look at the totality of the season, he had an excellent year at UC Santa Barbara. And by the way, I mean, you hate to even bring it up, but like while enduring a tragedy, because you knew all through that, his mother was was facing a terminal diagnosis. He's gone through kind of more than a lot of players ever, you know, thankfully that they ever have to go through. But Bremner went out and just got better and better as the season went along. I would say it was maybe a little bit of a surprise how quickly he went in the draft, but you look at it for the Angels, you look at a team that likes to move their pitchers quick. I can't think of many pitchers who are more suited to move quickly from last year's draft than Tyler Bremner.
Yeah. And I think it was also a draft where, you know, there wasn't a consensus 1-1 pick, let alone a consensus 1-2 pick. And, you know, as we got closer and closer to the draft that day, it seemed like it was pretty consensus that Bremner would go in the top 10 to 12 picks. And I think that was sort of the range of all players that were kind of in consideration within that top 10, of course. So, yeah, I think you look at Bremner, there's a lot of interesting traits here. He throws pretty hard. You know, the four-seam fastball obviously being the selling point. Sat 95 miles per hour last year, was up to 99. It's an incredibly efficient four-seam spin profile. What do I mean by that, JJ? I mean that with a four-seam fastball, because it's backspin, you have spin that contributes directly to the movement of the baseball and how much that ball moves and how the plane out of your hand plays. Because of the high efficiency on his four-seam fastball, despite having a somewhat generic release height, despite having below 6 feet of extension, he's able to generate a really flat vertical approach angle. And the reason for that is because of that really high efficiency. So he's got a flat vertical approach angle. He rides it on average, at least with the college ball, was around 19 inches with about a foot of arm side run. There's a ton of real movement on that four-seam fastball. And velocity. So when you have that combination of velocity and movement, that's when it can work. And there's some release traits that I think are a little bit better than people necessarily realize, despite not having the extension or the super, super low arm slot or any of that sort of thing. The other part of it is he throws a fair amount of strikes, particularly with his secondaries. The slider and the changeup in particular were both really, really good pitches. The changeup might have been one of the best off-speed pitches in the draft when you consider the quality of the fastball and the difference in plane. There's about a 3-degree difference in plane. Anything over 2.5 is plus. That means that it's coming out of the hand from a similar release height, but as it approaches the plate, it may look like a fastball and then sort of dynamically drops. There's a fair amount of movement on that. And it's an unusual changeup. Gets a lot of arm side run. He actually spins that changeup more than he spins his fastball. So it has some sort of screwball elements to it too. It's a really interesting changeup. The slider, like I said, he threw for some strikes, doesn't get a ton of whiffs, doesn't get a ton of chases on that pitch. Breaking ball development is definitely going to be a big part of, what he needs to address, as a professional. But I think overall, you kind of look at the ball of clay that you're already working with here, coming from a really good pitching dev house in UC Santa Barbara. I think there's a lot to like with Bremner going forward, despite, some of the stink that gets put on Angels prospects. Bremner might be the exception on the pitching side.
So I do want to point out with Bremner. So he did not pitch after the draft, which is not that unusual, but there was some general arm soreness. Don't worry about that really too much right now. He has actually gotten on the mound. He has thrown for the Angels already this year in 2026. Is basically a full go. You mentioned a little bit, but the thing that really does stand out here, when you say, well, why could this guy be a fast mover? And again, Angels like to move their pitchers fast, but there's really advanced strike throwing here for a college pitcher. You said the ease of operation here that you say, well, why is he able to do that? That's kind of one of the key things here is he's able to consistently repeat, consistently throw strikes. And that's where, well, it'll be interesting to see, like you said, there's a little bit of breaking ball development that kind of needs to come on here, but at the same time, that fastball changeup combo combined with the command, Jeff, I just don't think, like, if you see an aggressive assignment that's not the majors, but an aggressive assignment like to Double A Rocket City, where the Angels like to send guys a lot of times, I don't think that's too aggressive here, because I do think that with Bremner, if you send him to A ball, that changeup is just going to mean that he's really not getting anything developmentally out of the process unless they took the changeup away, because he's just going to make hitters roll over or miss it over and over and over unless he gets against more advanced hitters, I would think.
Yeah, I think anytime you're talking about a college starter that has a track record like this, that has put together some innings, that has pitched in big games and, gone to Team USA and all that sort of stuff, he's faced good lineups. He's had to pitch in pivotal spots that mattered, all that sort of stuff. I think he's already cleared those tests. So for me, outside of you have a really cold environment, Double A, you're a Blue Jays affiliate, you want to send you a Savage, for example, to Vancouver or New Hampshire in April or May. I think that makes sense. When you have a affiliate in the deep South and it's going to be pretty warm from day to day, there's no reason not to send him to Rocket City. I don't think he's going to get any good of, facing the same few teams for a month in Tri-City before moving on. I think, even with organizations who don't have as aggressive a promotion track record as the Angels do, assigning a pitcher like this to Double A out of the draft the following spring isn't outrageous. When we saw that with Jack Leiter, we've seen it with others.
Now, the question that we're also going to see with Bremner is okay, we expect him to move pretty quick. Jeff, the to kind of wrap this up, is the slider or another breaking ball, is that going to be kind of the key between whether this guy is a durable, dependable starter and someone who's maybe more of kind of a potentially a more of a front end guy or a mid rotation starter?
Yeah, I mean, he does throw the slider really hard. It sits 85 to 87 miles an hour. I think when you look actually up to 88, so I think you kind of look at that and you say, all right, there's velocity on there. There's some spin traits. It's about 24, 2500. It's not crazy spin. Adding a cutter, I don't think is crazy. He's thrown a curveball a little bit. Maybe they, you know, add a cutter and make this a little bit more of a gyro slider. I think there's just like some seam orientation stuff that they could probably make adjustments on and find more shapes. When you have this kind of power and feel, and the ability to create some shapes, I'm sure that there's something there that they can sort of figure out and shake out for sure.
Well, that is right-hander, Angels right-hander, Tyler Bremner, the number one prospect in the Angels organization, someone who keep an eye on during spring training, because we're talking about a guy who, again, we expect to move pretty quickly. But that is our prospect profile for today. And if you enjoy this one, please make sure that you're checking out the Baseball America YouTube channel, because we are rolling out one of these each day during spring training. All 30 organizations, we're looking at the number one prospect for our prospect profiles. So check those out. And also, please join us every Tuesday. We go live at 3 p.m. Eastern with the Hot Sheet Show, where we talk about topics like this every week. And we love to have you, and we answer your questions on that show as well. So for Jeff, I'm JJ. So long, everybody. Hello, everybody. JJ Cooper, Jeff Ponce, another of the Baseball America Prospect Profiles, as we are looking at the number one prospect in all 30 MLB organizations. Today, we are looking at the Seattle Mariners' number one prospect, shortstop Colt Emerson, one of the best prospects in the game, the number seven prospect on the Baseball America Top 100, and a guy who, Jeff, reached AAA at the very end of last year. With the moves that the Mariners have made this offseason, I don't think that we're going to see him on opening day. We could. But I would expect that we will see Colt Emerson making an impact in the major leagues at some point this year, whether that is opening day or a little bit later. What gets you excited about watching Colt Emerson this year?
Yeah, I think we look at this player and it's not out of the realm of possibility that he could be in the major leagues before his 21st birthday. You look at what he did last year. Over the first 2 months of the season, struggled a little bit with high A Everett. The numbers weren't good. Made an adjustment in his swing. There's been, you know, some sort of tweets and articles, et cetera, that have been written about this, but essentially what happened, to summarize, he got a little bit more upright, which sort of changed his bat path, allowed him to cover more of the plate. And what happened after making those adjustments in May is he went off over the final few months of the season, JJ. He hit 306, 404, 508, had 12 home runs over his final 85 games, did all that while running a strikeout rate of 17.5%, a walk rate of 12.1%, and a majority of those games, JJ, were played in the upper minors as he was called up to AA, hit really well there from pretty much the start of August on, and then saw some time in AAA at the end of the season and continued to produce in AAA. So I think you look at someone like this, and it's very rare that we see, you know, the best prospects at each level get a little bit better, but that's usually indicative of somebody who can make adjustments on the fly, which is a big part of succeeding and surviving at the major league level. And this is a guy that can do that. And I think he kind of proved that multiple times throughout the season. And now at, 20 years old, is on the cusp of potentially making his big league debut in 2026.
When you say that he could make the majors before his 21st birthday, if he got called up, let's just lay out a scenario where Colt Emerson is a futures gamer and he goes to the futures game at the All-Star game in Philadelphia. And then the Mariners say, you know what, from there, you're going straight to Seattle. He'd still be making his debut before his 21st birthday. Turns 21 in July, late July, July 20th. So we are talking about someone who's going to play most of the season, or more than half the season, as a 20-year-old. I also do think that, like, I want to get into the defense a little bit, Jeff, because when I look at where the Mariners are, when I look at this Brendan Donovan move they made, I kind of like how this sets up for Seattle. I would expect that what they're going to probably do is let Cole Young get an opportunity to try to take that second base job that he didn't hold on to last year, and they ended up kind of having to make some moves. But then, okay, you put Cole Young at second, you put Donovan at third. Start there. Start that way. J.P. Crawford is short. The great thing about this is if there's an injury, Cole Emerson is ready in AAA to come and help. This guy's a shortstop, but I do think also really could be a long-term, like if Young does not work out at second base, I would say that most likely the logical thing you do is you'd slide Brendan Donovan over to second, and Colt Emerson could become your third baseman for now. But I also would feel like probably your shortstop in the long term. What do you kind of think defensively? How does he kind of project for you?
Yeah, I think in terms of the hands, the actions, the internal clock, he knows how to play the position well. We have an above average defensive grade on him. I think that's very reasonable. You know, he's not the twitchiest guy. He's not, super rangy. He's not going to cover an insane amount of ground, but he's going to make the plays that he gets to. The arm, maybe arm strength wise, isn't off the charts, but is very accurate, really quick release. And I think when we see guys have success on the left side of the infield, we often think they have to have a cannon like a Mason Wynn. But we've seen guys with big arms like O'Neill Cruz and others not necessarily always have success over there. It's playing the position that matters. A big part of it is how quickly you can get the ball out of your hand and just how well you handle the ball when it's caught in your glove. Those transfers and all that sort of stuff. He has all that. I think, long term, he's going to probably end up short or third base. I would lean a little bit more toward third base. It will be interesting to see how that infield shakes out, because I feel like they have three middle infielders for three spots. And then Emerson, who maybe is a little bit more of a traditional sort of style defender at third base. Donovan had played it coming up as well. But I would say that his natural position at this point is second base, and Young's natural position is either second or short. So it'll be interesting to see how this shakes out, because I think if Cole Young does not hit, does not perform, you do have Colt Emerson here. And if he performs the way he did last year in AAA, it won't take long for him to get called up, and could be the long-term answer at third base. And you have Donovan under contract for a few more years. So it's kind of interesting. They have a lot of depth within this, positional group, but particularly in the middle infield at the moment. So how all that shakes out and how Colt Emerson gets opportunities, we'll see. I do think offensively, though, he has the greatest chance to provide impact hitting out of those four. So, I think whenever he's ready, we're going to see him.
One of the main reasons we're excited, we just talked about his age earlier. This is the guy who we expect to see. He's going to be up as a 20 or a 21-year-old this year. And it doesn't guarantee you success. I'm not going to say that if you come up as a 20 or 21-year-old, you are going to be a Hall of Fame or anything like that. But your chances of becoming a Hall of Famer, your chances of being a long-term star go way up the earlier you reach the majors. And to see a guy like Emerson, the thing with Emerson that's also stood out is Jeff kind of rattled off like the numbers of how much he improved in the second half. But he's also a guy that when we talk to scouts and kind of over the years, he's always a name that's brought up as someone who, even when he wasn't producing loud, statistical numbers, he's always stood out as someone who really jumps out as as someone who scouts just jumps off the page. He's long been considered kind of a prospect to keep an eye on, because you see this kind of, you saw that swing right there. You see the swing, you see a left-handed bat who's going to produce offensive impact and potentially defensive impact as well, who also has just been able to be more advanced, have that baseball IQ to kind of handle playing against players much older than him. That's why Colt Emerson is the number one prospect in the Seattle Mariners organization, a guy who could make an impact in the major leagues, could be a key part of this team by the end of the year, where we're saying, hey, remember when Colt Emerson was a prospect not that long ago? That kind of guy. That is the latest of the Baseball America Prospect Profiles. For more of these prospect profiles, please go to the Baseball America YouTube page, because we are rolling out one of these every day during spring training, one for all 30 organizations. For Jeff, I'm JJ. Thank you.
Hey, everybody. Jacob Rudner, JJ Cooper with another Baseball America Prospect Profile. We're running one of these a day throughout spring training, breaking down the number one prospect in every system in the nation. JJ, we're talking about Sebastian Walcott, the number one prospect for the Texas Rangers. An interesting preseason for Walcott. Suffered an elbow injury. He's going to miss some time, but we are bullish on him nonetheless. What do you see in our friend Sebastian Walcott, and what do people need to kind of look out for here?
So to start with, Walcott is still our number one. This is accounting for the fact that we know he's having elbow surgery. He's going to need Tommy John surgery. That will probably cost him on the field. It's going to cost him probably the entirety of the 2026 season. We'll see. A lot of times guys who have this surgery can come back and DH a little bit late in the season potentially. So we'll see if he plays, you know, as a hitter at some point this year. But even with that, like, we are accounting for that in our top 100. It moves him from number 16 in our top 100 to 26th in our top 100, about a 10 spot difference. But it doesn't really change that much about the long-term outcome, the long-term possibilities of Sebastian Walcott. To kind of lay out why this isn't a big a blip as maybe you think, a big a setback, Walcott's been one of the youngest players in every league he's ever played in. And because of that, to give an example, he will now, in the top 100, he slots right ahead of Caleb Bonnemer, the White Sox shortstop prospect, one of the breakout prospects, I would say, of 2025. Caleb Bonnemer had a great season. Caleb Bonnemer, we expect to have a great season this year. But Caleb Bonnemer hasn't played in AA yet, and he's older than Sebastian Walcott. And Walcott spent the entirety of last year in AA. So while this will cost Walcott time, it does not dramatically change. He's still on a very fast timetable. And the underlying reasons that he was one of the best prospects of baseball still stand. You see right there the kind of the frame, the potential. There's significant offensive upside here. And it's in a guy who has, again, pre-injury, had one of the better arms in the minor leagues. We expect that arm to at least come back to above average post-surgery. And you're talking about power, you're talking about hitting ability, you're talking about the ability to stay in the dirt. All of these things kind of add up to make him one of the higher upside prospects in the minor leagues, and easily the highest upside prospect, I would say, in the Rangers system, especially the position player side. And all that's still true, Tommy John surgery or no Tommy John surgery.
You mentioned the hit and the power. The numbers back that up from last year when Walcott opened the season as the second youngest player in the Texas League. He and Pirates prospect Connor Griffin, who we like quite a bit, were the only teenagers in the country to finish the year with 15 or more doubles, 10 or more home runs, and 30 or more stolen bases while spending any time in AA. My question for you is this. When a guy has Tommy John surgery like Walcott is going to have, what is the track record of coming back with the same offensive tools that we've seen that in the past?
I have pretty good. Like, the reality of it is that this is a less common injury, obviously, among position players than pitchers. Normally, when you hear Tommy John surgery, you're thinking about pitchers. But we do see it with position players. Bryce Harper has come back for Tommy John surgery. But the comp that I think is probably most important to pay attention to if you're a Rangers fan is one that kind of pretty well accustomed to, which is Corey Seager had this surgery relatively early in his major league career. And I think it was 2018, if my memory serves. And obviously, if you've paid attention to Corey Seager's career, hasn't really been a big setback in Corey Seager developing. You know, he was already on his way to being a star, but has developed into being one of the stars of the late 2010s and now the early 2020s as well. It's something where this injury, the success rate now for major league pitchers is pretty good. For hitters, position players, it's actually, I would say, you know, even a little bit less of a long-term worry, because with pitchers, the real question becomes there's a minor failure rate of players who can't come back from it. The stuff never comes back. But the bigger risk among pitchers is that a guy has it, say, like as a 19, 20, 21-year-old, and then blows it out again down the road. And then your risk factor really does go up if you have a second one. We don't really see. I've struggled to come up with an example of a position player who's ended up needing two Tommy John surgeries. So with that being the case, I would expect that we're not going to see this be a long-term issue of Walcott. This was something that kind of there was a little bit of a worry about this at the end of last year. He was supposed to go to the Arizona Fall League because of elbow pain. He shut it down. The hope with that always is that it's going to, you know, improve with rest and rehab and recovery. In this case, it didn't. And so if you're going to have the surgery, this is kind of the time now to have it. You've had the offseason to see if it would improve. It didn't. And now this means that by the start of 2027, he should be ready to go. I would expect that even if he doesn't get into a game in 2026, probably heads to AAA to start 2027 and makes his major league debut in 27, which would still put him as a 21-year-old big leaguer. It's something where how young he is, how young he's been, he will just have turned 21 right when the in March of 2027. So you are talking about still someone who's so young that even if it did take him an additional 2 years to make the majors, he'd be one of the younger players in the major leagues.
Even if the bat is not a question as a result of Tommy John surgery, one of the things that we wonder, regardless of whether or not a player has major surgery on their arm, is whether or not they're going to stick at a premium position. We ask that question when it comes to catchers, shortstops, and center fielders. So, JJ, is Sebastian Walcott somebody who we project out to be a shortstop, and how does this latest injury impact that?
I think there was already a little bit of a question. He is 6'4". And now that does not mean we have seen examples now of 6'4", even 6'5", 6'6", shortstops in the major league. Something that really, when I started at Baseball America, was not something that was ever considered. But when you look at the size he is right now as someone who, you know, is basically getting ready to turn 20, and you say, okay, what is he going to look like as a 22, 23, even, you know, 25, 26, 27-year-old? There is some thought that maybe he ends up outgrowing shortstop, moves to third base, or even to right field. I would say that, you know, the most logical thing is that if he does outgrow it, you move him to third base. He did have 24 errors last year, but most of those I would describe as kind of young player errors. And with that, you know, I wouldn't really worry about that long term. The real questions are, okay, we hope the arm comes back as we expect. But on top of that, just how big is he going to be 4, 5, 6, 7 years down the road?
Well, that is going to do it for this prospect profile. For more of our prospect profiles, check out the Baseball America YouTube, releasing one of these each day during spring training. Also, make sure you check out the Hot Sheet Show Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. For JJ Cooper, I'm Jacob Rudner, and we'll see you on the next one.